Welcome to Art Watch, an enlightening foray into the lives of working artists. Come on in, step into our studio, and listen to something unique about the artistic development of some of our friends. I'm your host, Elisha. Today's story spans 31 countries across 6 continents. As we tag along with a globe-trotting photographer extraordinaire, who has spent her life telling the stories of others. Now, we get to listen to her share her own. Please welcome Olivia Blinn. Olivia, welcome to Art Watch.
Thank you.
So, tell us about yourself.
I would describe myself primarily as a photographer. I am also a graphic designer, although that's a newer addition to my kind of arsenal of skills. I am also kind of my current career trajectory. I'm a humanitarian aid worker, but still do a lot of photography and graphic design alongside of that. And so photography is something that has always just integrated itself into my career and my life and has been a thread, I guess, throughout my entire education and into kind of my life today.
How'd you get started?
My parents had both kind of been photographers a bit, with like SLRs, film cameras, but nothing major. I mean, we took a lot of road trips and family vacations that are very well documented, which I'm really thankful for now. But it wasn't something that was, you know, vocational for either of them. So in some ways, like, they'll even say it was a bit out of the blue that I took on to this like interest in photography, and got my first camera. Yeah, at probably around 10, I'm going to say. And then a few years later in middle school, started saving up all of my babysitting money and got my first digital camera, which was very exciting, $200. And then in high school is when I finally got my first DSLR. So that was, the big springboard, I feel like, to being like, oh, I'm taking this seriously. This is a thing that I'm doing, and I want to learn more and just kind of like explore it.
What's your favorite subject when you're shooting?
I think my favorite thing to shoot is still just portraiture and portrait photography. I think people are just beautiful and compelling and wonderful. And so I love getting to take photos of a person that some way really represents who they are or says something about them, or even just is like a beautiful photo of them. I think I've had so many times over the years where I've gotten to show someone a photo, whether it was even like a portraiture session or if it was, you know, something I was doing for another project or this, that, or the other, and to have someone be like, oh, wow, that's an amazing photo of myself, or normally I don't like how I look in photos, but this is great. That kind of joy they get is so special, because I think it's kind of interesting that we never fully see our physical appearances, right? We only ever see reflections or photos or videos or whatever it may be. And so there's something to be said about getting to see another person and kind of all senses of the word, and then like creating an image that encompasses that and reflects that, and then the excitement that they have, because I think there's a joy in being seen, right? And there's something to be said about that. That's really beautiful. And so that moment to me is just so special.
Let's talk about being self-taught. And it sounds like a lot of that has come out of necessity, which I think is pretty much the case for a lot of people who are self-taught artists. Mm-hmm. What differences can you see between your insight or your skills or abilities being a self-taught artist as compared to those who, you know, have some traditional schooling behind their work?
Photography hasn't always come easy because I'm self-taught. I have had to just like figure some things out and Google as much as I could. I didn't know a lot of other photographers when I was young. So I know like a big influence in a lot of ways early in my photography work was my high school art teacher, who I never took a class with, mind you, because I was in all like college classes my junior and senior year. earning credit that I would end up transferring to my undergrad university. But so I didn't have space, quite literally, in my schedule for art classes. And she was able to like make it work so that I could use like have an independent study with her, which is not something she would normally do given some of the circumstances. And it was just wonderful to me. That's like the first time I got to use Photoshop even and some of that stuff. Had to be a little scrappier, maybe. Like I had to find people and find resources and ask questions. Whereas I think obviously a classroom is such a wonderful forum to just like allow students to ask questions. That's not the format that I had. So I had to kind of seek people out to be like, how do I do this thing? Or you know, being self-taught and kind of that journey, what it instilled in me is this deep debt of gratitude to the people who helped me along the way, and then a desire to really kind of return the favor.
How has your journalism background impacted your photography?
My degree is in journalism with an emphasis in visual journalism. And so what I love about the other skills that I learned in my journalism classes and in just kind of pursuing that route has been how to ask good questions, because I think that's what all of art is as well, is learning how to ask good questions. Madeline L'Engle has a quote about that, about art is like the importance of art is about just learning to ask good questions rather than getting kind of airtight answers, is what she says in her book, Walking on Water. So I think on a very literal way, journalism taught me to do just that. Like I learned how to ask, like in speech, to ask questions that were meaningful and told a story. But it translated into how I saw the world.
Olivia, on the subject of storytelling, what's the story about how you got into your disaster management major?
Great question. So this NGO was recruiting on my undergrad campus, met up with them, had a really great chat, kind of told them about my skill set. You know, I'm a photographer, but I do these other things. Because at this point, I was doing a little bit of design work. Somewhat on a whim, I decided to apply for the international internship component from the same organization. So the same organization has an international internship for people who have generally just graduated undergrad or with their master's even. And so I submitted for it. And I remember waking up to a text, I think, first, and then a phone call from my contact from the previous summer's internship, who'd become a really good friend. And I got on the phone with him and he's like, hey, so do you want to move to Cambodia? And I was like, what? My first time living alone was in this big old apartment in Phnom Penh, Cambodia, 23 years old or whatever. And I'm like, what is happening? and it's the best thing that's ever happened to me, pretty much. And my 4-month internship turned into 6 and turned into 8. And I fell in love with being uncomfortable, with just being in a world that was not mine, but I had like the opportunity to learn from. And I was the guest and was welcomed in the most wonderful and beautiful ways. There was an enormous earthquake in Nepal that had struck west of Kathmandu, the capital. And because our country office is positioned obviously relatively close to Nepal, a lot of my colleagues were getting pulled to do what's called first wave disaster response there. Then Nepal, my boss goes, who she is still one of my closest friends and mentors to this day, just one of the best people in the world. And she, within being there a couple of days, was like, are you interested in coming? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. And she's like, all right, expect an email. And so I got an email from the headquarters of the org being like, hey, so you're going to go be the information officer in Nepal. Can you leave in 24 hours? And I was like, I've lived here for 8 months. I own a motorbike that I need to sell. I need to pack up all this stuff. I need to like do this paperwork. And they're like, okay, we can give you more time. You got 48 hours. So I did. So I packed up my life in 48 hours and I moved to a new country. And I landed in Nepal with all of my stuff in a country that had just been ripped apart by a 7.8 earthquake. And so the org I worked for was rolling out a mobile data collection platform to kind of monitor and like keep track of all of the work they're doing. So in disaster response, the first thing you do is assessments, right? Which is just like going into an area, talking to local leaders, talking to different members of the community so that you get a representative kind of like a sample of what are the needs here, what does it look like, and then you're planning. Obviously, that's a very pared back version, but you're planning your response around that. Now, on top of that, the beauty of being a photographer is generally people need photos. And so they would send out photographers from headquarters, but they knew at this point that I was a photographer as well. So they're like, great, why don't you go get some photos too? Why don't you go talk to some beneficiaries? And so I got to just shoot photos in the midst of it, which was wonderful. I was in Nepal for the second earthquake, a 7.3. That happened about 2.5 weeks after the first. But in the midst of that too, then getting to shoot photos of people receiving just these kind of basic home kits. And one of my favorite photos I've ever taken actually was from one of those distributions, because they got these cooking kits of like metal pots and pans and things. And there was all of these women and children sitting around, and they had gotten them in a cardboard box. And so they're opening them. And this woman got so excited about this giant pot, but because of the way the sun was hitting, she was backlit and her face was in shadow, but she was waving the lid of the pot. And I caught the shot just as she basically used it as a reflector for herself and lit her own face. And she is just like filled with joy, and it's wonderful.
This journey that you've been on has had some pretty euphoric highs and some pretty deep lows. What are the most significant moments to you?
Yeah, I think two projects really come to mind that were and continue to be incredibly significant to me. One was actually my undergraduate capstone project, which, to give you a little bit of context, I grew up in this essentially a culture that is, I mean, it's on the nose, but often referred to as modesty culture. And basically what it says in a simple way is like, women, you're responsible for someone else's actions, and men, you are like not people, you are animals who have like no control. And the logical end of either of those is tremendous amounts of shame. And I grew up in that world and started to really question it while I was an undergrad, to the point where I wanted to explore it more. I did this project that became known as the Embodied Project, looking at this intersection of what does specifically kind of the American evangelical church say about these things and how does it impact young people. Another project that has meant a lot to me is a photo project that I did at the very end of my time in Iraq, and then I finished it up in probably the 6 months after I left. And during my time in Iraq, for one, I was living in a white compound, as far as like white poured gravel, white walls, white buildings that we lived in, no color, no greenery. Never been so deprived of art and aesthetics in my entire life. So toward the end of my time, I knew I just like, okay, I gotta somehow capture this experience, because so many of these things that happen are not my stories. These are stories of the patients that have come through our hospital and stories of my Iraqi colleagues, and those are sacred and they're not mine to share. So I really tried to evaluate, what can I share? What is mine? And so I came up with this project that ended up being titled Beyond the Blast Walls, Stories from Bartella, Iraq, which is the little tiny city just outside of Mosul where our hospital was. And I took a series of objects and things I'd collected over my 6 months in Iraq and photographed them inside one of our bunkers. So we had above ground U-shaped bunkers in the event of an attack. So the series is a photo with just like one single item and then a little story behind it.
So you've traveled to 31 countries, done work on 6 continents. What's on the horizon for you?
So that's a great question. I am currently working in the U.S., working remotely for an organization that does work in the South Pacific, back in Micronesia. I'm unable to travel to Micronesia given restrictions in the country, travel restrictions. So I'm actually doing currently a lot of design work, so that's fun. Way harder to do photography work remotely. Shocking, I know. I hold my plans very loosely. And so I don't know what's going to come next. There's this Mary Oliver poem that I really love that just says, like, instructions for living a life, pay attention, tell about it. That's it.
Thank you for listening to Art Watch. If you enjoyed the show, please consider writing a review on Apple Podcasts, leaving a tip at leaveatip.org, or if you can, support the production with a small monthly donation. Information on this, links to Olivia Blinn's work, future episodes of this show, as well as the audio and video version, can be found at artwatch.us. A special thanks to this episode's sponsor, the Fribourne County Arts Initiative. Located in the historic Bessesen Former Opera Palace in Albert Lea, Minnesota, the FCAI is an arts nonprofit that offers a wide range of programming, from visual arts to virtual open mic nights. Visit them online at www.fcai.us. This program was also made possible with generous support from the Minnesota State Arts Board, the Southeastern Minnesota Arts Council, and Fribourne Maurer Cooperative Services. Our show next month features Suzanne Crane and her new Solitude series. I'm really excited to share it with you. Hope you can tune in. Until then, take care.